and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for mid-May 2023. The global carbon dioxide level is 424.45 parts per million, way above the 350 parts per million scientists tell us we need to be at. And on top of that, there's only 2,436 days left until the year 2030, by which time we need to get our carbon dioxide emissions down by a factor of, by a half. So let's get going. Anyway, turns out that the electricity grid here, well, anywhere, but here in New England, is a difficult thing to understand. It's hard to grasp. It's abstract. You get your electrons that turn on your computer and your TV every night, but where do they come from? Most people don't know. And that's for good reason, because electricity is an abstract thing all by itself. Electricity is hard to understand, and there's lots of ways electricity works. But on top of that, there's an economic component to the distribution of electricity. So you have the complexity of electricity, and you have complexity of the economics of who's buying and selling and who's delivering it to you, all kinds of stuff that make it very hard to understand what's going on. That difficulty is because this stuff is valuable, okay? There are things on the electricity grid that have value. That is to say, you can put a dollar sign on those things, all right? And if you think on the grid, of course, the most immediate thing is you have a dollar sign that is attached to the electricity that comes in and runs your induction stove, right? That's an immediate way there's value in the grid that you're getting, that you're paying for. But there's other ways. You could, the people who run the grid could say, gee, I see value. This is say the people who run the grid say, I will pay somebody to be able to produce electricity when I need it in an emergency, right? That they are willing to just pay you to be sitting there with a power plant that does nothing until they call up on the phone one day and say, oh yeah, please turn on your power plant. And now you're producing, you're adding some electricity to the grid. There's value there. There's even value to the grid in a promise that you will be providing electricity 3 or 5 years from now. You promise that you're going to build a big power plant or you put up a bunch of windmills and you're going to have electricity for those guys in 5 years. That promise by itself has value. And that's why this stuff gets so difficult, because the vocabulary starts to talk about the markets by which these weird ideas of the ability to produce electricity, where all that stuff gets basically auctioned and sold to the, you know, bought, sold to the lowest bidder kind of thing, right? So it's really, really difficult to follow. But it's important to get some grasp of it, especially as we move forward into a renewable energy clean grid. And so there's some idea, there are some ideas floating around out there that help us get to that clean grid state over the next 7 years, right? And that's why we're pleased to have with us Lily Worthley, who's the Clean Energy Director for the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, who understands this stuff and has an insight into how some of this works and what we should be thinking about. And it's interesting. I mean, it's not, it may be abstract, but it's not impossible to understand. And it's good stuff to try and bend your head around, because it matters. So Lily, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So I think I tried to describe the grid and sort of these ideas of value in the grid. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but tell me what things are in the offing that take advantage of the sort of abstract nature of the things the grid considers valuable, right? And that will help help us get to a clean grid in a few years.
Yeah. So there's, like you said, there's a whole bunch of markets that make our electricity industry or sector, grid, whatever, it makes it all work. So there's the forward capacity market, which is that 3 years from now, this is what the grid is going to look like. These are the power plants that are going to be online. This is how many megawatt hours they're responsible for, having that match what they expect the demand to be. And then they have a different market or subsection of that forward capacity market of peak facilities or when the they don't quite get the demand estimate correct and uh-oh, we have to flip the light on a new peaking plant because we didn't quite get it right, or there was
this would happen in the middle of August.
Yeah, middle of August, middle of winter, just when there's a lot of energy needed, these plants get turned on. And like you said, they get credit just for being at the ready. They also get penalized if they are saying they're at the ready and they're not at the ready, which happened a lot over the Christmas Eve storm that we had, where we had a lot of blackouts happen across the region. Could have been a lot worse. But they had power plants that said, yeah, we're ready to turn on whenever. And then they were not ready to turn on whenever. So there's a whole bunch of different markets that help that make so this very abstract, funky thing called electricity that we can't store outside of batteries, which is a different consideration, but we can't really store it. So once it's in the grid, it needs to be used. It can't just sit idle. It can't go away. Those need to be used. So it's a really interesting, and if you're a nerd looking for a new interest subject, the energy sector is your thing. It is wild of just how it's all able to work and how all this complex considerations, everything from how do we make sure that we're meeting demand to where these power sources are coming from to making sure that they're at the right voltage and they can go where they need to go. It's pretty wild stuff. It's kind of a man marvel that we're able to do this. It's pretty awesome. But it is incredibly complex because it is so, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just so wild that we're able to capture it in the way that we are so reliably.
Well, I guess one of the questions is the, so you're right. I mean, it is, it's amazing, but these guys, whoever these guys are, and we'll just, we'll refer to them as these guys, but it's basically here in Massachusetts, it's ISO New England, which is a basically a corporation that runs all this stuff and thinks about this stuff. ISO New England is worried about making sure that in 2025, 2026, 2027, there is enough electricity to meet the demand. So ISO has to now project the electricity, they project how much electricity is going to be needed, and then make sure that somebody is going to be there to provide that. And then we overlay on top of that the requirement that this starts to become green. It gets very complex. But I'm interested in sort of unpacking the concept of a forward capacity market. Because all three of those words mean nothing to most people, right? Forward capacity, right? What does that mean? My take is that the forward means you're looking forward 3 years in time. The capacity is the ability to make electricity, and the market is the how much ISO is willing to pay you to be ready, not even to supply the electricity, just to be there on that day. Is that fair? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah,
explain that. Unpack that one, because that's a toughie.
Sure. It is a toughie. But yeah, I would say that's essentially correct. So for every year, there is a plan for what we're doing 3 years from now, or what ISO New England is going to do 3 years from now. And all of these different power generators from utilities who are distributing the power to the folks generating the power, you know, the solar farms or the big dirty coal plants, whatever, they're all in the room, so to speak. Everything's virtual these days, but, you know, they're in the room saying, you know, we're ready to go. And ISO New England will come out and say, okay, we looked at all of our options. This is what we're planning to do 3 years from now. And this is how much we're willing to pay for the Berkshire Wind to stand by and be at the ready and be part of the mix.
My understanding as well that this forward capacity market, that ISO will start to pay the developer in 2023 to help finance. I mean, there are payments that are made now that will assist in the construction of the power plant that will be available in 2026.
I believe so. And again, this is a very complex industry, so I could be wrong as well. But that's my understanding as well, is that there is a lot of value in having these sources of power be at the ready, making sure that they not only are being developed, but they actually are being turned on in time. The construction timeline stays true. The regulatory process is all going smoothly. There is a lot of moving parts to make sure that going from an idea to turning on the switch to making the power plant interconnect with the grid. So there are definitely mechanisms that ISO New England is interested in and uses to make sure that in 3 years from now, yes, this is ready to go.
I guess what I'm getting at is the idea that the ISO is willing to help finance this development because there is value that ISO sees value independent of anything else of having this this stuff becoming available even before it's finally built. And I guess the question is, if you say there's a forward capacity market, is there an analog for clean energy?
So right now, not really. So the Mass DOER, the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources, they released a proposal, first draft of proposal in January of this year for the forward clean energy market, which would fill this gap of how are we planning out not just what energy or if there's energy meeting the capacity 3 years from now, but what that looks like and how do we prioritize renewable energy or clean energy sources. So they come up with this very long, very wonky, very dense proposal of how this would all work. And it goes really deep into the weeds and really deep into how this would all shake out. But the long and short of it is, before the forward capacity market, so before the market that we just talked about, there'd be a separate auction, which would be all about clean energy. And they have like 7 different renewable attribute credits or certificates going into this market. So
tell me in 2 seconds, tell me, what's a renewable energy certificate?
Yes. So RECs are this way, are the way that we account for clean energy. So once, you know, a wind turbine or a dirty power plant throw their energy into the grid, it's all mixed together. There's no telling what's what. There's no telling where these electrons are coming from. So at the source of power generation, for every megawatt hour that's generated, there is one renewable energy certificate minted as well. And those renewable energy certificates and other renewable attribute credits, which maybe are non-emitting or accounting for how much greenhouse gases are not used, you know, whatever that may be, that goes into a separate market. That's all we're able to say how much clean energy we have. We being utilities, companies, whatever, how we're able to say this is how much clean energy we have. So this forward capacity or this forward clean energy market is more of those, but in a forward thinking way rather than at the time of generation.
Dear listener, you should know that if you want to hear more about what a renewable energy certificate is, you should page back one show in this series, because we just posted Lily's explanation of what a renewable energy certificate is. So it's you need a cup of coffee to drink while you're listening to it, because it does get confusing. But yes, so the renewable energy certificates are described in the show we just posted. Go back and listen to it if you want, and then come back here to try and understand more about what the forward clean energy market brings to the table. Right. So forgive me for interrupting, Lily. I just have to make sure we made reference to that. So we're in there. You're saying the forward clean energy market is analogous to the forward capacity market. It would happen before in the sequence of planning for 2027. Let's see, what do we got? 3 years from now, 2026, right? So if planning for 2026 is, I mean, they do the forward clean energy market auction, right? Where people bid in to try and to be the ones to provide that clean energy. Is that fair? And then after that will come the forward capacity market. So please tell me more about the forward clean. I mean, who would go into a forward clean energy market? What sort of entity? I mean, we refer to people often, but usually it's a developer, it's a company, right? What's the entity that goes in and does that?
Yeah, so the FCEM proposal, which it is in its draft phase, it's very early, but it has been being talked about, I guess, since like 2016. So it's been a long process to get this draft proposal, but there's room for changes and all that. But the way that they have it now, it's basically anyone and everyone can be part of this. So before, states as entities of themselves weren't able to be a part of this. In the FCEM proposal, they are. So Massachusetts has a clean energy goal of getting to net zero by 2050. This is a way that they can secure that. This is a way that they can make sure we are going to get clean energy in these ways, because right now they have to be reliant on the utilities working with it, the other regulatory bodies, or I don't even want to say that, just utilities doing what they are supposed to be doing and enforcing it through regulation. But the utilities are the ones who are able to actually do the work. In this proposal, the states would be able to do the work. Companies would be able to do the work. Utilities are still able to do the work, but it's a whole bunch. And there's some considerations to keep in mind of how this would kind of potentially gum up the works of a forward capacity market auction. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's pretty cool.
So that's, I guess I hadn't, that hadn't dawned on me, but if, for example, Massachusetts says, the state government of Massachusetts says, we are going to be, you know, 50% clean energy by 2030. On the way, they could say in 2026, Massachusetts could bid to buy all of the renewable energy credits produced on the grid, sort of, and then say, yeah, we got them all. We're clean. The rest of you guys can go, you know, pound sand. And that would,
I mean, force a little, other, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so it would be a regional market. So the idea is that it would be for the ISO New England region. So Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, they can all be fighting it out, creating more demand, creating more incentivization for clean energy.
Wow, that is so cool, because it's a way to guarantee, and of course it's sort of cutthroat, but Massachusetts could sort of bigfoot the process, buy the renewable energy certificates it wanted to satisfy its own requirements, and then let the market work out to produce what everyone else wants, right?
That's my understanding.
Wow. Rhode Island and Massachusetts and Connecticut are all competing for these RECs. That's going to make them very valuable renewable energy certificates. And then that makes more people want to get into the market, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a whole bunch of new credits being introduced with this FCE and the Forward Clean Energy Market. You know, just another acronym for the mix and clean energy.
But do you know if the, so on this Forward Clean Energy Market, what's being sold, the actual renewable energy certificates? Or is it the right to buy in 2026, the right to buy the renewable certificates in 2026?
Ooh, that is a good question. I actually don't know the answer to. Because
the RECs haven't been produced yet.
Right. They haven't been minted. I believe it's a way to have a stake in it of saying, we're going to grab these RECs when they become available. Mm-hmm. But an important consideration is that it's not just RECs as we know them today. They're also, I'm looking at the proposal right now, you know, there's six of these, and they range from New England Renewable Energy Certificate. It was made in New England, not Texas, you know, whatever it may be. There's a Clean Energy Attribute Certificate, which is confusing, but largely very, very similar, but includes some new sources. There's Greenhouse Gas Marginal Abatement Certificates, Clean Capacity Certificate, State Defined Certificates, meaning some other thing that New Hampshire wants to go do and have included in this market. I would guess that it would be the staking a claim in those attributes when they become available.
I mean, it's so interesting once you go down this sort of rabbit hole. But I mean, I think that there's one of those credits that you just referred to is probably the ability to store electricity, right, in a battery. So someone who builds a battery system can claim some of this stuff. And even, dear listener, this is where it really gets wonky. It turns out the batteries, if you have a lot of wind turbines and you're putting energy into the – storing energy in the batteries are able to help the grid maintain the 60 hertz frequency, right? And that maintaining the 60 hertz frequency – all by itself is extremely valuable, that you might build a battery system not to provide electricity, but just to make sure that the entire New England grid is at the same 60 hertz faithfully, you know, in every city and town. And so again, it's back to the kind of wonky ways that there is value, that is to say, money on the table being provided by the renewable energy technologies. And that's probably what's tied up in all these seven or eight different kinds of certificates that would be on the forward clean energy market.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I was working in solar, one of the ways that one of the solar farms I managed made money was the way that I thought about it was providing energy to the grid to keep it running, which is the 60 hertz, you know, idea that you were just talking about. We received payments because we were able to help keep the grid running. And it's, yeah, there's a whole host of ways that renewable energy companies can make money off of what they're doing.
I imagine it's, I mean, now I'm getting pretty far out of my skis, but I'm sure there is value. I keep thinking about the idea that as we go forward and everyone electrifies their car and everyone is cooking on an induction stovetop and heating their house with electricity, you cannot have the grid collapse.
Right? Oh my gosh, no. Right?
I mean, so the value that's going to be in the reliability and redundancy of the grid, or whatever systems you have to make sure that the grid stays alive, are going to be incredibly valuable, right? And that's a way that I'm sure people are thinking about it. But I mean, that's, again, it's back to the sort of values that you can identify and then auction off in advance in order to help, as you say. I mean, if the state of Massachusetts paid money for the right to buy the RECs in 2026, I mean, that's a good thing because it helps the whole system move forward, right?
Yeah. And that's definitely true. But I think something that I want to, you know, mention and definitely highlight is, you know, we're saying 2026 as if this market is currently happening. It's in an early stage. It's, you know, years down the line. It took, 6 years from 2016 to be able to get to this point of having a draft proposal from having the idea initially. So I'm excited about this. You know, it's definitely, yay, new ways of incentivizing clean energy. But then I put on my scientist hat, I put on my climate activist hat, and I recognize this is not the solution that's going to bring us out of the crisis. You know, we're looking at this being implemented at the earliest 2028, 2029. Uh-huh. That's not quick enough to get to what we need to, based on, you know, the IPCC and what they're calling for from a global level, especially when we take into account how much the wealthier, more privileged communities such as Massachusetts need to be doing to do their part for a global transition to clean energy. So I'm excited about this on one hand. Yes, it's exciting. I wish it happened when I was 5 years old. I wish I wasn't personally working on it.
But I mean, it, to your point, though, it is, we're looking at a 2050 deadline, and these things, I mean, the 2030 goal is to reduce our emissions by half. So we got to get the other half done over the next, between 2030 and 2050. So this will have value when my grandchildren are going to high school, maybe. But what can people do today? I mean, how can people help get this kind of thing going? I mean, do they call their congressman and say, do it today, don't wait till 2028, you know, get this draft going faster? I mean, what are the options?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's always value in emailing legislators and saying, hey, this is going on, I'm excited about it, you should be excited about it. Please, you know, make sure that your position on it is known to the entities that are pushing it forth, the DOER. Also messaging the DOER, participating in the comment periods that they're going to be having periodically, in which MCAM will be monitoring and making sure that we are letting our advocate networks know about. Mm-hmm. You know, that those are the big things to say, yes, we want this. But I would say even more so, and what's even more important in terms of the broader clean energy transition, is being an active participant in activism, in advocacy, going to town halls, you know, making whatever pathways that are available to you for a cleaner, better, more just, more equitable energy systems, be a part of that conversation. So join an advocate network, listen to this podcast, but then go join a group. Because, you know, with this market, you know, there's also things that aren't being considered, which absolutely need to be considered. There's no credit for making, or there's no provision if these generators are allowed to have these credits, if it's an environmental justice population that's being affected by it, There's no equity considerations. There's no justice considerations. That needs to be part of our clean energy transition. You know, I don't want the same world that we live in 20 years from now with wind turbines. I want to have a society that is fundamentally more equitable and just and takes in consideration those who have been historically marginalized and historically oppressed by our energy system and righting those wrongs. So this market does cover a lot of what we need to do, but it doesn't go far enough and it's not quick enough.
So on the I know or believe there's a toolkit that you have already produced, Lily, right, that people can read about the forward clean energy market and ways to take action. You'll be updating that
yeah,
as things go forward. And where can people find it?
Exactly. Yeah. So we developed this toolkit specifically for the first comment period, which ended sometime in February. It was a very, very short comment period. And one of the mentions in the toolkit is if you want to have community feedback and participation, you need to have longer than like a 2-week right. period for right. us to comprehend this wildly wonky document and have knowledgeable comments to give. But we will be updating that. Currently, it's just being distributed through our chapter email list. So if you're not already part of the MCAN community, make sure to sign up on the website, which is just massclimateaction.org.
We'll put the link in the show page. Sorry.
Continue. Perfect. Yeah. So we'll keep updating those networks as the comment periods become available. But we can't be sitting on our, you know, on our right. heels waiting for this to happen. I'm working as clean energy director at MCAN, but I'm also part of my town's climate action planning committee. I'm working with Extinction Rebellion as a volunteer. Like I'm being that annoying person at my parents' dinner table saying, hey, cusping retirees, what are you planning to do with all your free time? Having these conversations and making sure that folks are recognizing that business as usual cannot continue and that we need to be acting in a radically different way than what we have been for the past several decades, especially, but, you know, 300 years. The way that we're treating the earth is not sustainable. We are acting as if we live on a planet with infinite resources, and we don't. Simply, we're in a finite system, and we can't keep extracting as if we aren't. I would say just keep going and be strong and be willing to be the weirdo, be willing to be the Debbie Downer, because this is serious. This is our futures.
This is serious. Well, what we'll do is we'll put up links to some of the stuff that we talked about on the MCAN website. So there's a show page on the MCAN website. We'll put up information there, stuff you can listen to, stuff you can read. That'll be at massclimateaction.org. You look for newsletter and more in the banner, pull it down to blog and podcast, and we're hiding away in there. If you have comments or questions about the show, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. Please listen to us on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps and get your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app. Kids these days. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support, providing us insightful ideas week after week. I want to close where we always close by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Lily, thank you so much for being here and explaining this opaque, abstruse, and otherwise difficult to understand concept.
Absolutely. If I can even have made this a little bit more clear for listeners, you know, that's amazing, because this is definitely opaque, abstract, and wildly wonky. So appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.